The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game. We welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, Kelly Bidlin hanging out with me here on the Shield, which I learned earlier in the week. That's what it is colloquially referred to as.
That's right. Show us some respect.
There we go. The Shield. We're live. Open Championship underway. There's a nice little energy here to Vegas for people who've stayed up all night and are unexpectedly seeing live sporting activity here at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning. But we're underway. Open Championship. The big headlines so far, just to get you caught up, Rory McIlroy struggles. The tournament's second favorite, 7 over par 78 in the clubhouse. Did not gain a stroke in any of the major categories today, was negative in all of them so far today. The latest, though, Justin Thomas in the clubhouse, 3 under par. Your leader right now, 68 round one for JT. He was second in the field in putting today, 4th in approach. He is 10-1 right now on the live odds board. But a whole lot of other guys, as the way the tournament has played out, very much spaced out so far. 12 players under par as it stands, including some big names. Xander Schauffele, 1 under through 5. Jordan Spieth, 1 under through 3. Jason Day, 1 under through 8 right now. How about Sepp Straka, the low guy out there on the course right now, 2 under through 10, while Justin Rose is one of 4 other guys in the clubhouse at 2 under par, Kelly. So there are some big names doing some damage, as random as this tournament is here through the first almost completion of round 1.
Yeah, I think Spieth and Day, you would normally say, are surprising based on how they've played this year, but you know, what were we talking about earlier in the show, right? With these conditions, as ugly as they are, guys with experience, not only at this course, but in playing in many, many link-style golf courses, that experience showing out here early on. So I think that's why you're seeing those guys low. And then we were talking about during the break, I think a big opportunity here for some of the big names, Schauffele, Scheffler, those guys. If you can actually post some numbers in the red here today on a tough scoring day, would be massive.
100%. Scottie Scheffler birdies 3 after a bogey on 1. Scheffler, the tournament favorite, even par through 3 holes. Tiger Woods gave one back at the, that was the par 5 4th hole, and then he just doubled 5. So a tough stretch for Tiger. He was 1 under through his first 3 holes, but that, Kelly, in a nutshell, is how quick this stuff can change.
Happens fast. Yep.
Dang. A bad 3-putt bogey at a par 5, and then you double 5, and all of a sudden you're 2 over through 5 holes. Other guys just getting their round started today who are off to bad starts. Phil Mickelson, 2 over through 7. He was a slight favorite in a matchup against Tiger Woods. And then Cam Smith, I just saw him miss a short par putt for a very good putter in general. 3 over through 3 holes for a former Open Champion winner. Cam Smith. So it's not an easy go for a lot of guys out there so far today. The other notable I wanted to mention, Brooks Koepka, has had a roller coaster ride. He was 2 over through his first 3 back-to-back birdies on 4 and 5. He is even par there through 5 holes. We'll keep you posted as the rest of round 1 continues on this show and throughout the day here on VSiN. We'll also talk some college football this hour. Thor Nystrom joins us in about 25 minutes or so, to be very accurate there. Thor will break down some of his favorite college football angles with our college football betting guide coming out in about 2 weeks here at the network. We right now, though, Kelly, are finishing up our thoughts on the AFC North. That's our division of the day. We talked about the teams at the top. You have 2 teams nearly the same. They have the same win total in Baltimore and Cincinnati, and very similar in the division odds, as the Bengals have taken a lot of action. Not totally co-favorites yet to Baltimore, but about 5 cents longer on those division odds. Then you get to Cleveland and Pittsburgh here toward the bottom, who both have brutal strength to schedule. And, Kelly, that at least on the Pittsburgh side, along with lots of question marks about their roster construction, that did trigger a bet for you here for I don't know how many years in a row this is, but you did trigger a bet.
I was just trying to think. I think it's only 3 years in
only
a row.
Only 3, yeah.
Only 3 years.
Sometimes we tend to embellish. But
I was going to say, I think it's only 3. I would have to go back and check that, though, but I was thinking about that during the break, because the Vikings to win the NFC North, I think I bet about 4 years in a row. Steelers are creeping up on that. But, yeah, I mean, look, this is – I don't know if I trust the quarterback situation completely with what we're going to get between Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. I actually have a feeling that we're going to see Fields at some point this year, and if that's the case, it means Russell Wilson did not work out to start. But, man, this schedule is just brutal. And even in this beginning is going to feel key, Ben. I mean, you go out at Atlanta, okay, what – that might be a game you might actually be able to steal. Is Kirk Cousins going to be completely healthy? You know, is there going to be some adjustment period for Atlanta to work with, you know, get that offense humming? Yeah, possibly. And then you go into Denver, which is never going to be, you know, never easy going into Denver to play, but I don't think that Broncos team is very good. I think this Chargers team has some questions as well. The Colts, I expect to be good this year, but I don't think they're probably the most volatile team in the league to me this year. I don't think I'd be shocked if they ended up with 6 wins or, you know, 10, 11 wins with Indianapolis. So, you know, those first 4 weeks are going to be big. But, yes, I am on under on their win total, under that 8.5. I bet that. I did not bet any of the alts yet. And I think by the time those got out and was really staring at him, I'm probably just passing because I made a pretty big bet on that under 8.5. But, man, this is it's not a total knock on the Steelers, right, Ben? It is so much of the division in this schedule. I do put the Browns, the Bengals, and the Ravens so much further ahead of Pittsburgh. And while we think there is so much parity within this division every year, it's seemingly these guys beat up on each other almost every single season. Pittsburgh, it wouldn't surprise me if we're talking maybe one division win, something like that within that, and then you got to go face the rest of this schedule here that includes the Eagles, the Chiefs.
That's not
fun. Some really tough teams here. The Jets on this schedule, the Cowboys. This is going to be a brutal season for Pittsburgh.
It's one of those years, too, where, the classic case of, let's say overachieving. Some would argue that was exactly what happened for Pittsburgh, but at the same time, they won what they won, and now you are rewarded with a tougher schedule as a result of that. It just so happens, based on the timing and how this all sorts out for them, it is the toughest by opposing win total strength of schedule this year. And the other part of it is as much as I like Arthur Smith coming in as an OC, and you would like to think that he is the perfect sort of guy to revitalize a quarterback like a Russell Wilson, who needs a fresh start, needs a new mind to help him get the most out of his remaining value. Look around what they have. I mean, I look at some of the positional ratings I have. I mean, bottom five wide receiver, a pass catcher group in the league. The offensive line and running backs are basically the one strength of the team, at least on offense, but this has been traditionally a team that wants to go ground and pound,
right?
And Arthur Smith certainly wants to be a lot more forward-thinking. This will not be 1970s Pittsburgh Steeler football anymore. That feels like a natural clash of your personnel, how it has traditionally been built, versus what your new offensive coordinator coming in wants to do. And at the very least, you have to think that takes time to forge a solution. And when the most important part of your schedule is early,
right,
with the most winnable games, I don't see how that's a logical path towards success.
Yeah, I'm with you. And this is, I think you start wondering, what do you think about the quarterback situation? I mean, is it Russell Wilson? Do you think that's what we're seeing for the entirety of the season?
Oh, when that announcement first came out that you had both would go to Pittsburgh, and I remember being on the air and saying, oh, I'd make that a pick'em as to who gets the week one start.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you can it's ridiculous to sit there and say one should be that great of a favorite over the other. Now, I was obviously very wrong on that assessment, and the whole reason Russell Wilson agreed to come was because of a guarantee to start week one. He's a -1,000 favorite to get the start, but I don't agree with that sentiment whatsoever. I understand that's why they needed to make that guarantee to bring him there, but you look at the advanced numbers, as much as people want to just rip on Fields every which way, advanced stats-wise do not suggest he's all that far off from how, especially with how far Wilson had fallen with his overall numbers.
Yeah, I think Wilson starting week one, that makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, I just think it's, like you said, it was part of the promise anyways.
Exactly.
But it's easier to tell Fields too, right? Hey, you couldn't hack it in Chicago. You're going to have to earn it here, right? So you're going to be starting number two. But does that mean, by that bye week, I think there's a very good chance we could be seeing Justin Fields by then.
Sure thing. Would not be surprised at all on that. The other team in this division is Cleveland. And I went into the offseason. We did a segment back in February, Kelly, thinking about our early risers and fallers. And I definitely put Cleveland into the faller camp, and it was mostly predicated on Deshaun Watson at quarterback.
Yeah.
And what would the realistic expectations be for him? What is he actually now? I will admit, I have started to reverse my tune on this Cleveland team as I've dove more into the actual the roster here. What I like to do, at least for my power ratings, I'm not sure what your process is, Kelly. We're all different, but I like to look at a composite of individual position rankings And so I got to look at, you know, like the PFFs, mm-hmm. the Sharp Footballs of the world. They do really, really good in-depth 1 through 32 team-by-team rankings at every position, which to me is really valuable. So for me, like I've got, you know, overall roster, obviously quarterbacks, O-line, running backs, pass catchers, front seven, and secondary as well as special teams. That's eight categories right there. There were only five teams that ended up rating, if you look at the composites, above average in seven of eight categories this year. Nobody rated above average in all eight. Cleveland was one of those five. And you start looking at the roster, and you sort of realize we are so sour on them because of Deshaun Watson and everything he represents, both his on-the-field struggles, obviously everything off the field. It's a bad quarterback situation yet. Still an elite top five O-line. Still, even with question marks at health for Nick Chubb coming back, this is a top 12 running back room. Above average wide receiver core, even though it's not the sexiest in the world. But then a legit top five front seven, top five secondary as well, and very solid special teams. And you start going, the value is definitely on Cleveland. It's just, can you get there with the trust on quarterback, the most important position on the field?
Yeah, I think it's been tough because I've been higher on Cleveland the past couple years now. And now I'm just kind of wash my hands and leave this one alone because I'm with you. I think from roster construction, I think you could easily compare, you know, this Browns team to Baltimore and Cincinnati and say they're right there. But yes, we talk quarterbacks. I've been a big Deshaun Watson guy over the years for his entire career. And these past couple years waiting for him to kind of get back to what we once saw just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I'm tired of waiting. At this point, I can't buy in. I'm not buying in until I see it get done on the field. So while the defense is still going to be great, I think overall roster is fantastic. The quarterback's a major question, and that leaves them in a wild card race.
I have them the third best roster in the AFC, as crazy as that is. I do like them to make the playoffs at plus 150, at least for Cleveland in 2024. We'll talk some NBA awards. Kelly's made some bets when we come back.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July. You've got about 2 weeks to do that and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. It saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. And with VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all our special edition betting guides like the NFL guide, which is out right now, and then the college football guide coming out 2 weeks from today. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Do not wait. Sign up before the end of July. You get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. VSIN.com/subscribe. We're back here on a numbers game, hour number two, watching some Open Championship. Tiger Woods does have a birdie look at six after a tough three over in two hole stretch. He's two over through five. Brooks Koepka just made a bomb at six. That's back-to-back-to-back birdies for Koepka to get to one under par as we watch the Open Championship. Nothing better, Kelly, than a Thursday. We're sitting here watching the Open Championship, debating on airport driving drop-off etiquette for friends, you know, and it's just a great time to be had by.
Yeah, I'm a terrible human being. Take an Uber. Today's day and age, take an Uber or a cab if you live in a city like this or something. It's a... You don't need someone taking you to the airport and picking you up all the time. I don't mind picking up people from the airport.
Yeah.
When I know they're like there at baggage claim, they're ready to go because I live like a whole 10 minutes from the airport. Boom, I'll hop in the car. That's no problem. But most of the times, like, I don't want to bother anybody asking that. Just hop in an Uber.
It's funny how the number of times anecdotally, the number of times I've been asked to give people rides versus the number of times I've asked for rides. It just kind of hit me the other day where it's like, it is, you know, inordinately like a 95% to 5% split.
Yeah,
like I'm never asking, but I feel like I get asked all the time, which is weird.
It's like three steps short of asking someone to help you move. You know what I mean? It's not nearly as bad, but like it's in the same territory.
I just remember Super Bowl week here. I had to, you know, get creative because I don't know if you picked up any friends who were in town, but it was like a mile long, the passenger pickup.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, here's what you do. This is, you're not supposed to do this, but you go out this other side door behind baggage claim. Like, I'll meet you there. I'm not waiting an hour line. It's just, it's not happening.
So there have been a couple times, too, major events here where I have gone to pick up people from the airport because of there being super long Uber cab waits. And it was like, all right, well, yeah, I'm 10 minutes away. I'll come get you.
Meanwhile, Kepka just stuck another one to within 6 feet at 7. And it is notable, Kelly, as we're watching this, how the condition's not exactly as bad as when we came on the air about an hour ago. Like, the wind looks to have died down. There's no rain. You talk about a huge opportunity, and that was the original forecast. Late wave Thursday, early wave Friday would probably have the slight edge. And there's definitely an edge. Now it seems like every time they show a new player on the course, Kelly, it is a very, very makeable birdie look.
Yeah, this could get I don't want to say out of control.
First round,
out of control quick, but
first round leader live betting opportunity. Anybody?
Yeah. Let's see.
Like Kepka to be the first round leader right now.
Plus 750 on him.
First round leader.
Yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be a terrible bet.
I mean, I don't mind that.
How about at DraftKings end of round top five, Brooks Koepka plus 240.
Oof. Okay.
Just keep in mind when you're
keep
in mind, depending on what shop you're betting at, dead heat will come into play. It will come into play at DraftKings.
If Koepka makes that putt, he's T2, which there are seven guys now at two under. An amateur named Jaime Montojo just holed out on one for eagle, so he's one of the guys at two under par. So,
they just showed it.
That was, wow. You start your Open Championship, you're an amateur, and you jar one on one for a two.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. This is, Brooks was one of the guys when I was asked about the old Gil question, who are you going to regret if they win it and you didn't bet it? It was, Brooks is there because he was kind of in the same line of thinking of me betting Rahm, of just the number drift had gotten so ridiculous, and what these guys have done before in majors. I couldn't doubt any or couldn't give anybody any crap for betting those guys. But man, they such an opportunity. If this real conditions calm down here and stay calm, looks like the rain has subsided a little bit. The wind's still blowing at like 18 miles an hour. But you're talking Koepka under par, Schauffele one under right now, Shane Lowry one under right now. These guys were all. All guys that people I respect were tipping this week. A major opportunity. Scottie Scheffler's even par. Major opportunity for these guys to post some red numbers this week when a lot of the other big names have had bad days.
Even Koepka, end of round one top 10 finish was just plus 110 a second ago. And again, those are dead heat applying at DraftKings, but that just flipped to minus 110. And I'm still like, really? Minus 110 for top 10? I mean, Koepka to be first-round leader, at least have a share. To get the 3-under, that seems very attainable right now with the way the weather has died down. Koepka has a short birdie putt at 7 to make it 4 birdies in a row after starting 2-over through his first 3. Cam Smith, it seems like the only guy they're showing you struggling right now among the big names. Cam Smith, 4-over through 5. He just looks all out of sorts so far for the former Open Championship. Open Champion winner. I'm still upset. I still remember that Rory. I think I got him like plus 150 live when it was the final round, and I'm like, Rory's not losing this thing. What was that, two years ago?
Yep.
And
want to bet on that one. Sorry, buddy. I had Cam on that
one. I know you. I remember you did. All right, Koepka drills the birdie putt on 7, so he's 2-under par now. Yeah, I would bet that now before it starts to move because, I mean, this dude is on
four straight birdies
Four
for
straight
Brooks.
Birdies
Oof.
For Brooks. And
watch
he's,
out.
Dialed in. Through 7 holes right now at the Open Championship. All right, we teased this a little bit earlier. Kelly, you have been combing through some of the early markets in the NBA, and you've made a couple of bets here. Win totals dropped in a lot of places late Sunday into Monday. They're starting to now come out here in Vegas. Yep. Same deal with the awards markets. We've had Rookie of the Year up for a while, but now the rest have dropped, Kelly, and we can get into that right now because, the most improved player, I think, was the one that jumped out to me at seeing Victor Wembanyama co-favorites at 10-1, and we're naturally just thinking, okay, the value's got to be somewhere else. Like, you can't just give every award to Wembanyama when he was already so good as a rookie anyway.
Yeah, I guess we can bring in the whole you don't normally see it go to a second-year player either. I don't know how much that would have – I don't know how much of the traditional voting rules are going to apply to Victor Wembanyama going into this year, though. That one is – it is tough. It is tough because I don't know if we're going to give him defensive player of the year – next year is, you know, doesn't that – or let's put it this way. If he wins MVP, Ben, right? If he wins MVP, shouldn't he, like, logically win most improved player then as well? Even though they probably won't give him both, but, like, if you've improved that much, you probably should win most improved player. I'm with you, though. I feel like this is one of those markets that he will probably not be there in. I agree with what Zach said earlier. Jonathan Kuminga's got the most interesting odds in this market right now, because you'll see the DraftKings. He's at 14-1. You will see him as the short shot in a lot of places. Obviously, he's expected to play a much bigger role with that Warriors team this year. Slide into that starting lineup and make a major impact. I'm not that big of a Kuminga guy, though. I can't get on board with that. And Mobley, I think can, but man, it feels like we're spending a lot of time kind of waiting for Evan Mobley now to flip this on over the past couple seasons. So I'm not really convinced with that. I think Scotty Barnes is interesting too. He, as far as the top of the board, he was one of the first guys I was considering there. I just don't know how much he can really improve off of last season, where he was, did make an all-star team as well. Jalen Williams, kind of same thing. He was so awesome last year. How much more of a jump, especially with the additions to the roster, can we really expect him to make? I don't know. And I will say, just before I get to the next name, because that is one that I did bet, Cade Cunningham. These are, like, last year, Ben, I went into this market waiting for this market to be released, because I knew I was going to be betting Tyrese Maxey. I wanted to see what number he was going to be at, was going to be betting him regardless. Bet him. That was my one awards bet, I think, that got home. Like, this is NBA awards betting, win total betting, futures betting. Like, yes, they're getting posted now. If there is not something you love right now, though, you can wait. There are going to be plenty of opportunities in season where you're likely going to get better numbers on some of these guys. So I think if you're looking in some of these awards markets, if there's a win total, like, for example, the Spurs for me, I was looking to bet over on the Spurs. 35.5 was a couple more wins I thought it was going to get posted at. It's a back away now for me, Ben. I'll look in season to probably play that and get involved with. But with some of these awards, I think if you're looking at them, I'm looking at more longer shots right now. If you want to grab now, if you think there's a chance the number only gets shorter, then it's worth getting involved to me. Cade Cunningham, I did put a bet in at him. You could shop around. I got 22-1. Not one that I'm crazy in love with. I didn't, hammer this like I did Maxey last year. But you're talking about, I think, a Pistons team that will be a little bit better next year. And Cunningham continues to improve. 22.7 points last year. He did play 62 games played. It could come into a factor here, I guess. But got up to 7.5 assists a game, for over 4 rebounds a game, shooting the ball a little bit better from 3 as well. We'll see if the number of attempts increase with him. So I do like him there. And then the other bet that I'd made in this market, just because I feel like I have to at the number, Christian Brown, 40-1 for the Nuggets. Nice. Just because he's going to be in that Nuggets starting lineup now with KCP gone. And no, he didn't have an overly impressive year last year, but man, with just the amount of opportunities he should get, I like him at that number.
Great stuff. We'll talk more NBA awards in a little bit. Thor Dystrom on college football next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Into our final half hour of the show here on the Thursday edition of A Numbers Game, back from downtown Las Vegas. We do occasionally tend to get tweets on the show sometimes, and Brian chimes in on our airport discussion, Kelly, where he basically says if there are different levels for arrivals and departures, his go-to move is to pick people up at departures on night flights. That is a great pro tip, though. You're not technically supposed to do that, but I would still say it's a good pro tip.
Wait, say that again.
To pick people up at departures on nighttime arrivals, when, especially in Vegas.
Have
you ever flown in here at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night? Like,
yeah.
It is. It can kind of be.
Thought about that. So then, you would walk upstairs. You would go upstairs.
You as the arriving passenger, you would go downstairs. It's not that, but it's just not. You go out on the same level as baggage claim. Usually, you're going up, at least in Vegas, to get your Uber.
Right. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I like that. Pro tip: just keep it to yourself because not supposed to do it. Alas. Big thanks, too, to our technical director today, Matt Hicks, Larry Muir. We got Taylor Sperlin on audio as well behind the scenes. The Koepka number is starting to move a little bit because Brooks Koepka is 2-under through 7 and looks to be in pretty good position there on the par 3 8th. As we are looking at Justin Thomas, if you're just joining us, 3-under par there in the clubhouse. If you're looking at some of these first-round leader bets, though, I mean, Koepka seems like the guy to make right now. Sepp Straka also, who is another guy at 2-under, just dropped a shot. And, of course, right as I say that, Koepka.
Finds a bunker.
He finds the bunker on 8. I thought he had, I guess, the scoring the data was off there because he is not far from the pin. The issue is he's short-sighted in the bunker there. But this is a big up and down now for Koepka, who's made 4 straight birdies, was plus 750 a second ago to become first-round leader. So want to see how that goes. The other guys at 200, we didn't even mention any of these guys, Kelly, at least worth mentioning quickly. Alex Noren, Nikolai Højgaard, Russell Henley, who I did hear Wes Reynolds on Long Shots mention him as a sleeper.
Yep.
Guy who's great in these sorts of conditions.
I believe he ended up on him. I don't know in what markets, but yes, nice. I do believe he ended up on some
200 par, and then we already did mention Justin Rose, who led the field in strokes gained approach today, at least of the guys who finished their round today. So those are your 200 par guys, and then Adam Scott, Matt Wallace, Chris Kirk, the other 3 in the clubhouse at 1-under par. So far as guys who have actually finished, they are just counting up here on my screen, 8 players who finished under par of the, you know, whatever, 100 or so who have wrapped up today.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, really, really is. And again, I think a huge opportunity here over the next couple hours for some of these big names to post some low scores. While you know some of the other big names, Rory, Bryson, really, really did struggle today. So Thor's going to come on with this next segment, some on-air housekeeping.
Beautiful.
Here. So I'm going to throw some new MLB markets at you,
yes.
Ben, that got posted that we were talking about the other day. These are markets that I don't believe anybody had posted before the season.
So what's crazy to me is, yes, just the precisely the timing, because when have you ever heard of an awards market that just books are like, oh, yeah, 90 games into a 162-game season, we're just going to post them.
Yeah.
When does that happen? But for the Rolaids Relief Men of the Year in the AL and NL, those odds are now up, as well as Manager of the Year.
Yeah, I don't remember. The only thing I could think of when we were talking about that the other day was, when did Clutch Player of the Year get posted for the first time in the NBA, which I believe was the 2 seasons ago was the first time they ever started listing that. But I don't remember when it was, but I'm sure it was before the season.
Clutch Player is up right now, if you're wondering,
right,
on NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
Steph Curry's the favorite at 10-1, which, sure. I mean, good luck.
Actually makes a lot of sense that award is becoming kind of hilarious to handicap, because you need who's the go-to scorer on a team you expect to be in a lot of tight games, right? So you don't want a team that's going to be really bad or really good. You need a team that's hanging around 500, and that was, you know, it was DeRozan and Curry battling for that last year, which made a lot of sense. Those were 2 teams that were stuck in a lot of close games, and those are the guys who always get the shots at the end of the game.
Makes a lot of sense. Go figure.
I might actually make a bet in that market this year. I don't know. 10-1 actually sounds pretty fair to me on Curry.
That's so funny, because my first thought was like, who would bet Curry? But apparently I'm the idiot. So, but what's funny, yeah, you have these Rolaids Relief of the Year markets, AL and NL. And a lot of this, I mean, if you're looking at the handicap, basically the way these odds have been set up, it is as simple as it gets. It is who leads the league in saves, and we're just going to order our odds by that. So Ryan Helsley actually leads the major league in saves. These are broken up between NL and AL. Helsley, 32 saves so far. Kyle Finnegan, who is actually 3rd in the odds board, he has 25 saves. Robert Suarez, who has been the Padre closer, 22 saves. He is tied with Raisel Iglesias on that 22 number. Suarez is the 2nd favorite at plus 350. Iglesias up 12-1 so far. If you go down a little bit, we'll start here. This is purely NL. Trevor McGill, of all people, 25-1, who was not expected to be the closer for Milwaukee at the start of the year. He is at 18 saves. I would first off just scratch any of those Brewer options, because Devin Williams is about to be activated from the 60-day IL pretty shortly after we get underway from the All-Star break, so no point in betting the Brewer guys as long as they are. But it cracks me up, because you have, you know, these are the smallest of sample sizes on these relievers, right, Kelly? So, I mean, you've got some of the biggest deltas of current ERA, which for relievers is sort of a ridiculous thing to look at, but yet this is a voted on award, so people are still going to look at that, versus expected ERA and expected fielding independent pitching. And there are some guys who clearly have been very, very fortunate so far. You know, Helsley, case in point, 357 xFIP, but a 236 ERA to this point, 32 saves and 41 appearances. Not a guy I would be interested in betting here. If anything, it's probably, you know, at the same time, like, I would say it's probably Raisel Iglesias. When you're 22 saves and 36 appearances, that is a team in Atlanta that has struggled so much. Like, you would kind of figure for a guy of his ilk, 22 is like the minimum you would get through this part of the year.
Yeah.
And I think I'm also higher on Atlanta than a lot of people, just from a power rankings perspective. But that's a team who, if you are believing in them to not totally like turn it around, right, and all of a sudden win at a crazy pace in the second half, but to at the very least play closer to their perceived strength and their perceived value. That's a guy in Iglesias who is going to get, I would say, of anybody in the NL, the bulk of the closer opportunities here down the stretch.
So,
and 12-1 again. You're now look, you're 10 saves behind Helsley, but I don't believe this award is as simple as okay, you just whoever has the most saves,
okay,
you just give him that award, and that's what's kind of what's hard to parse together about this. Iglesias 2.02 ERA this year, so the raw numbers are actually better than Helsley. Just the opportunities because of the team struggles have not been as great.
Now, does this traditionally – I understand what you're saying on the saves. Does it traditionally go to a closer, though?
Generally, yes.
Okay. So you almost – I think the simple handicap here, right, is, okay, look closer and look on a team. Look on a team. I think like you're talking with Atlanta, right, they either a team that is good or you're expecting to get better – who will have opportunities for a closer to come in and earn a save, right? That, I guess that would be the easy starting point if I was actually trying to handicap these and look at these. But then I think you can start comparing some of those. But, yeah, I think you're probably just looking more at the top of the board here, but looking for some guys that are going to be on teams that are going to put them in a position to possibly pick up a save.
Yeah, and what's funny is they read so – The history of this as well, that's where it's a little bit, you kind of have to parse through it a little bit interesting because they had, so the Rolaids relief man was, the year award was actually discontinued after 2012. They transitioned this into the reliever of the year, which is named after Trevor Hoffman in the NL. It's the Trevor Hoffman NL reliever of the year award. And then the Mariano Rivera AL reliever of the year award, with the exception of 2020, where Devin Williams was a setup man and won this with zero saves. It has always been one of the preeminent save men. And that was a year, the COVID-shortened year. Williams had just insane numbers. He had 53 Ks in 27 innings at a .63 whip. They gave it to him that year. But Williams is actually your two-time champion. He's the defending champion, that 36 saves last year for Milwaukee. Felix Bautista winning it last year for Baltimore with 33 saves. I really, I want to make a case for Mason Miller on the AL side. Did you watch him in the All-Star game, Kelly?
No.
Dude comes in. He's throwing 104.
Whew.
He's 5-1. Guy, so by relief pitcher war, it's Mason Miller, and it's not particularly close. Like he's a half win more valuable than Emmanuel Clase on the AL side is. The issue is Oakland stinks.
Yeah.
Miller only has 15 saves. Clase has 29 for a really good Guardians team. And Clase has a .81 ERA, even though the advanced numbers indicate there should be regression there, like anybody with a sub-1 ERA. It's hard for me to see a world in which Clase does not win that award. As much as I love Mason Miller.
Yeah, it's if you're watching at home, one of these four team logos doesn't belong, right?
yeah, that's fair.
When you're looking at Guardians, A's, Yankees, and Orioles. So I think you make a great case why Mason Miller is there and why he's even in single digits, right? 5-1, and what you're talking on him is probably impressive enough. But, yeah, this one, it's kind of comical to me that you post this for the first time during the year.
Seriously.
And you start with a minus 650. Here you go.
It's also – it would really stun me if somebody other than Stephen Vogt won this, the AL Manager of the Year, the award.
Oh, okay.
Vogt's minus 150. Look, first-year manager comes in. Cleveland has been awesome. Now, a lot of this just depends on – and right now, I mean, Cleveland and Milwaukee are probably the two biggest question marks of teams leading their division at the All-Star break. Will they be able to hang on? Vote's your favorite right now for the Guardians and the AL. Pat Murphy, who took over for Craig Counsell on the Brewers side, is the favorite on the NL. Admittedly, only even money because Rob Thompson of the Phillies, and that team has had an amazing year. Thompson second on the odds board at plus 130. I would probably lean more on the Thompson side, if I'm being honest, just because of how good Philadelphia has been, and I do worry about the Brewers sustaining in the second half. Well, I certainly believe Vogt is going to win that award on the AL.
Yeah, I mean, if they win that division, if you think they win that division, he's probably the guy who takes that home, right?
Good to
minus 150 is probably bettable.
No doubt, it is. Thor Nystrom on college football to close out our show next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back for the final time here on a numbers game from downtown Las Vegas. Been a really fun show today, track and open championship. As round one is underway, Brooks Koepka did get up and down, by the way, Kelly, out of that bunker on eight. So I think we both like him to be the first round leader, don't we?
I was just pulling that up right now. I might be
plus 750.
Might be making a bet here.
Tiger Woods will not be your first-round leader. He just bogeyed to drop back to three over and is in the fescue on the par 3 eighth. So it was a great start for Tiger until it wasn't, unfortunately, for him. And how about Mackenzie Hughes, 2-under through four holes, Kelly? So we're seeing this late wave. I mean, guys are making birdies. They're out there. Wind has died down. No rain there at Royal Troon. As we close the show, though, we've not talked college football yet today, and we're excited to do that right now as our pal Thor Nystrom is set to join us on our Progressive Guest Line. You see him as on Fantasy Football Weekly, is all as well as Fantasy Life. Great college football NFL mind. Thor, we had to, you know, he's a little bit late today, Kelly, because he was up all night playing the new EA Sports college football video game. So we're glad we could pull you away, Thor, from your create a player mode. But I understand you've banked some hours so far on that, and we all need to hear what the early returns and reviews are as we finally get college football back in the EA Sports landscape.
Yeah, I sure have, and hopefully my bosses aren't watching this. The first night, and this is not a joke, I told you guys this before we got on, I stayed up until 6:30 in the morning playing that game.
Awesome.
So that was yesterday. Last night I it was a more manageable, you know, like 1 a.m. type thing. But yeah, we're getting on the practice field, especially, you know, someone that you know played NCAA 14, you go from that on the PS3 to this game. It is a big, big difference. Obviously, we had 11 years in between, and the gameplay is different, and you're two systems away. So I needed to practice a lot. I'm still trying to figure out how to kick field goals.
That's hilarious. That's so good.
I think I'm like a week or two away from having enough time to really dig into this. Yeah. But everything that Thor just said, too, is what I'm excited about. I'm like, the last time we played this, like, we've come so far technologically. Like, this is
we're having the debate over the weekend, like, as far as, yeah, the whole video game landscape. And I'm like, the last time I actually played video games was just, like, drunk FIFA senior year in college. Like, it's been, it's been a decade. The button mashing, you know, I don't know if you get away with that anymore. Alas, it harkens back to Thor's days in Lawrence, Kansas, our favorite KU grad.
Indeed.
Here. But on the show, he's got the Jayhawk shirt on as well today. Good to see Thor at Thor KU is where you follow him. From a real-life college football perspective, Thor, we have seen a lot of movements in the market. I wanted to first start with you. It's weird to see a Heisman move so aggressively in July, but we've seen that over the last couple of weeks. And the feeling from the market is that the hype on Dylan Gabriel, I mean, everybody's on this guy based on the numbers Bo Nix posted at Oregon, the fit for Gabriel within that system going from Oklahoma and Norman over to Eugene, Oregon with the Ducks. Are you sharing that belief as well? What should we make of that Heisman move that's seen Gabriel now? Co-favorites there with Carson Beck at 8-1.
Yeah, I am. Although the value of that bet, I think, has been zapped there by the market. But yeah, I definitely agree with it. The system speaks for itself. You don't need to have a bazooka arm in that system, right? That it's based on timing and accuracy, especially short to intermediate. Bo Nix last year had the lowest ADOT in the draft class. And he also had, I believe, the second fastest time to release the ball. You know, I mean, you get the pre-delineated reads, and then it's just about the rhythm and the timing of it. They have weapons there. Obviously signed Evan Stewart from Texas A&M over the offseason. Tez Johnson remains there. You know, you just sort of reload with your skill talent, stuff like that. You have to make the playoffs in this current area. You're going to have to be one of those 12 teams, I believe, to win the Heisman. Oregon is certainly going to be there. So, yeah, and quarterback, obviously, is, you know, the majority of these Heisman winners going back the last 20 years.
Yeah, Oregon minus 300 to make the playoff, about a $2.15 second favorite to win the Big Ten, behind only Ohio State, who will go to Eugene. That, you know, you think about the matchup there, and Oregon's taken some of the betting interest as well in some of those game of the year lines. As far as the power ratings, Thor, how close do you perceive Ohio State and Oregon to actually be there in that Big Ten race? And can anybody else potentially usurp those two from the top spot?
In my power ratings, I have Ohio State about a point and a half ahead of Oregon, but close, right? And in my power ratings in Eugene, Oregon would be the small favorite, of course, with the home field advantage there. The other team I like there, like-ish, is Penn State. This is the make or break year, I think, for not in terms of like his job status, but like James Franklin has all the pieces set up. Now you have gotten in the new offensive coordinator. Unfortunately, they stole him from my university, Kansas, and Kwaltnecki. He is going to be tasked with turning around Drew Allar. That system, people need to keep their eye on Penn State. That system helps quarterbacks a lot if they're able to run the mechanics of it. You have a lot of pre-snap motion, which allows the offense, or the defense tips its hand of whether we're in man, we're in zone. And then the offense can use that in conjunction with where are the numbers to give the answer to the quarterback in advance. I think that's really going to help out Drew Allar. It seemed like there you could see the gears churning with that kid last season. And when we seen him on the field, if you have that system, which is giving him pre-delineated reads and helping him out with the spacing, that's going to play up what is an NFL caliber arm all day, obviously. So that would be the other team. I'm a little bit lower on Michigan. Michigan was my title winner last year. You know, my preseason pick to win the title. They've lost a lot, and obviously they lost their coaching staff as well. They'd be my number four team in the Big Ten.
Michigan has dropped to 6-1 on that odds board. Those are to win the Big Ten title game. Penn State 5-1. You can also get Penn State -140 to make the playoff right now. They've taken a lot of action to the over, to your point, Thor, 10.5. But that is really moved up to the point where 10.5, that's the worst of the number now if you're betting it there on Penn State. As far as you talk about the offensive coordinator coming over from KU, your alma mater, Thor, I mean, it is as wide open as any of the major conferences now, where Utah comes in, one of the new teams to the Big 12, the slightest of favorites at +320, K-State +380, but I've heard it more than anything, a lot of cases to be made for some of the longer shots, like the Oklahoma States, the UCFs of the world within that Big 12. Kansas is in that grouping. Where do you stand on a league that feels to have the most variance as we get ready for the start of the year?
That's where I'm at. Yeah. You know, there's some conferences where I think the only bet you could make would be either the top team or the second team. Big 12 is the total opposite. It is the Wild West now of this new Power Four configuration that we have. You have all these new teams coming in. Of course, you lost Texas and Oklahoma. There is no front runner. I have six teams in the Big 12 in my power ratings bunched between 17 and 29. Right. I mean, and then you go a little bit lower. There's three more teams that are right behind that. You could make an argument for legitimately nine teams to win that conference if things break right for them. Do not bet the favorite in that conference. Go down the board to the fifth, sixth, seventh team on the board. Get your juiced odds and wet your beak on a couple different ones. Right. And try to hit the longer shot. But for me, yeah, I mean, Kansas, Arizona would be a couple teams that I toss out there. Obviously, Kansas. And then UCF on the longer shot as well intrigues me as well.
Yeah, UCF, Arizona, both sitting there 10-1 along with the Iowa States of the world, KU 9-1, Oklahoma State. I've heard that's kind of like the trendy sleeper because of the Mike Gundy angle. And also we get the news Allie Gordon will not be suspended at all for his DUI. They're +750, third on the odds board. I think it also leads just to a general interesting discussion, Thor, where you now have so many conferences, especially with the disbandment of the Pac-12. Like, what do you do and how do you perceive that whole first year for these new teams when it is every single week for the most part now a completely different preparation, new travel schedule, it's all new. We've started to get a little bit of data on that with like the UCFs of the world making their move to the Big 12. We saw BYU do it last year. We'll now see it in the Big 12. We'll see it in the SEC and in the Big 10. What's your general take on that, and is it to the positive or to the negative from the data you've seen so far?
The interesting one to me is going to be those two California schools in the ACC, either Stanford or Cal. I forget which one, but there was a stat up that their travel schedule, the amount of miles that they have to travel this year, if you combine them, it is bigger than the world circumference.
That's amazing.
An incredible stat. So you're going to have the travel there. But you're also going to have some of these East Coast teams that have to travel out to the West Coast in some of these wonky body clock start times for them. So it's for the California teams, yes, they have to figure out something to mitigate the effects of all that travel on their team. But they know that that's coming. The other teams going out to California from the East Coast, that's going to be a one-off for them. So it can go both ways with this. Are the California teams going to get worn down by the end of the season because of the travel? Or could they pick off some teams that are coming back there? Obviously, they're new to the conference. These teams haven't played them before. Taylor's team with Stanford. Taylor has a really funky offense that teams that are playing them for the first time, they have to sort out. You get tempo. You get all sorts of different formations. You get hide the ball in the cup type of offensive philosophy with him. So that could be interesting. And then Jaden Ott, Cal has him, is one of the best players in the nation as an offensive skill guy. That is going to be difficult for some of these ACC teams to adapt to, too. But that's the one I'm keeping my eye on.
Fantasy Life, Fantasy Football Weekly is where you see Thor Nystrom at ThorKU, outstanding analyst on the college football world, the draft as well, in the NFL. Always great to catch up with you, man. We'll let you get back to the video games. I know that's where you're headed right after this.
I got to. Appreciate it, boys. Kansas isn't going to win a national title by himself.
Absolutely. That's right. You're right on that. Cal, 6 on the win total. Stanford, 3.5. Yeah, I can't wait to see how those weird scheduling spots play out in the college football season this year. For now, that is all we can do. We wrap things up for Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. If you're listening on Radio Gojo, and Golic is next. If you're watching us on VSiN, Best Bets is coming up after this.